I think for me, for at this stage of the game, coaching my best is doing the best I can do to make my coaches better, because that's, I'm looking at myself right now more as coaching coaches than coaching athletes. I'm still coaching athletes, but I'm coaching athletes maybe between 2 and 4 hours a day. But a much larger chunk of my time, my energy, my thought process really is on coaching coaches.
In this episode of Coaches, You Should Know, I'm talking with one of the biggest names in sports performance, Michael Boyle. We're chatting about his newest edition of his book, Functional Training for Sports. Get ready. It's a good one. Let's go. Hey, I'm Jeremy Boone, and welcome to the show. If you're a first-time listener, great to have you. And if you're a regular, even better to have you back. And in fact, if you haven't done so, help me out, help the show out, and jump on iTunes and leave me a rate and review of what you think, what you like most about any of the episodes or all of them that may have added value to you. You can find me on the web at athletebydesign.com. And if you're on social media, let's definitely connect. My user handle is at athletebydesign. And as we get ready to jump into the fall, I am super excited. We've got NFL getting ready to get going. College football starts this weekend. We've got basketball coming up in a couple of months. We've got volleyball, soccer, you name it. It's an exciting time if you're a performance coach to get going. Also coming out here in probably the next month will be finally the release of my redesign for the website. We've been working on this for about a year to make it more easily accessible for the listeners of the podcast. And we'll have blog posts. We'll have a lot more tidbits and quotes and video clips of me having opportunities to go and speak to clubs and working with athletes to give you a little more insight on the application of all the great principles and coaching tips that you guys get to hear from myself and from my guests here on the show. We also have rolling out here in the fall a new program that I'm officially launching called Protect Your Mission. Super excited about that. You may have seen some of the pictures of me and some of the athletes with our shirt and with our wristbands for Protect Your Mission. And it was originally designed for high school student athletes and is rolled out into 10 to 15 high schools across the country here this month. But it's quickly caught on into colleges and even into businesses on this whole idea of what it takes to really protect your mission for your best chance to achieve your biggest goal. And all the principles and guidelines and exercises in the program were taken from my work with pro athletes and Olympic athletes and even high school athletes and coaches as well, who have big visions, have big goals, but they miss the mark, or even the best practices from those athletes at every level that hit their mark and they did achieve their goal, and kind of package that down into a short step-by-step system to help you, the coach, and the athletes that you work with. So at the end of the day, all of you get to tell a great and exciting story. On for today's show, really excited to be able to have on as a first-time guest, but definitely someone I've had a privilege to know since the mid-90s, Michael Boyle. And gosh, this guy has had such a huge influence in the world of sports performance, athletic training, physical therapy, basically any aspect of services that work with athletes, Michael has had a huge influence on. And just as a great time, I thought, to bring him on the show. He's got a second edition of his book called Functional Training for Sports. His first edition, believe it or not, was released, I think, about 10 or 12 years ago. So this is part one of a series between me and Michael in our conversation. And we dive in into some pretty exciting topics where I ask him, you know, where do you see coaches missing the mark when it comes to assessing functional strength? We've got a lot of different philosophies out there. I think you'll appreciate what Mike has to say. Then we jump in and talk about how does his assessments differ from working with one-on-one, small groups, large teams. We talk about program design. What do you do if you're a coach who has limited time with a big group of athletes? How do you fit everything in? Do you even have to fit everything in? So a lot of great stuff packed in this episode. I do want to add one more notice here that technology isn't always the easiest thing and isn't always solely reliable. And we had a little technology glitch in the post-production of this particular episode. Michael's channel is fine. You're going to hear him loud and clear. My channel, something happened in the post-production. It's going to sound like that I am in a big hall in a church or in a bathroom. But most important, you're going to be able to hear Mike loud and clear.
Okay, I'd like to welcome to the Coach Your Best podcast. First time guest, but definitely someone who I have had the good fortune to know for quite some time. This individual has served as a mentor from afar, someone I've admired, and just glad to have him on the show. Mike Boyle. Mike, how are you, brother?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, it is a bright and early on Monday morning, 6 a.m. We both have probably been up for a while given what we do. So I want to jump right in and talk about your new book. Although the book is not new, it's a second edition, Functional Training for Sports. And before we jump in, give us a little insight to how your summer's going.
Summer is actually going well. We've got, I don't know what the actual number is, but we're probably in the area of 300 athletes. It's the busiest time of the year for us. So we have people in there right now. We started at 5:15 and we will go till 9 o'clock tonight. So it's going very well.
Yeah. And the summer's going so fast. We're only a few weeks away, at least down here in North Carolina. I mean, August 1st, all the schools start with sports. So we've got basically 2 weeks left and, it's go time for the fall.
We're about the halfway mark, so we got about 6 weeks left. We start right around Labor Day, so we got a little bit more time, which is good. It's been a quick summer, though, because it seemed like it was summer started, and then it was 4th of July, and now here we are getting ready, going into the, you know, be the 15th by the end of this week.
Yeah, it's blinking, it's gone. Well, let's jump into the book, Functional Training for Sports. It's your second edition. Starting high level, who can benefit the most from the second edition of this book?
I think you talk about who can benefit the most. It's strength and conditioning coaches and personal trainers. But when the original book was written in 2004, the idea was that a parent could read it, or you know, an athletic trainer could read it, a physical therapist could read it, anybody could read it. And I still think it's the same type of book. But if you're going to say who'd benefit the most, it's going to be a personal trainer or a strength and conditioning coach.
Yeah, which is the majority of the listeners for the Coach Your Best podcast. But we've got, you know, quite a few high school coaches who serve as strength coaches. And so that's why I wanted to bring you on to talk to you about the book. How's the book different from the first edition?
Well, the biggest difference, as you know, is it's 12 years later.
Yeah.
And I was kind of surprised. The people from Human Kinetics came to me and said, "We want you to do a second edition of the book." And in truth, I wasn't all that interested in it. I said, "Hey, you know, it's still a pretty solid book. There's no need to really go back and rewrite the whole thing." And then Ted Miller from Human Kinetics just said, he basically said, "I don't think that's true. You should go back and read it," which I then did. Because obviously, as you know, you've written, you don't read your own stuff again.
Exactly.
And so I went back and read it, and I was like, wow, this is out of date. And so it's really – and that's why they're actually calling it the new Functional Training for Sports, and they're treating it as a new book because it really isn't the same book. It's the same structure. Somebody who read it in 2004 would look at it and say, oh, yeah, I recognize the way that it's set up. But the information has really changed pretty drastically in terms of – for instance, the word mobility wasn't in the other book. The word kettlebell wasn't in the other book. I said don't stretch in the other book. There were so many things that – and foam rolling, that we weren't even talking about foam rolling in the first edition. So there's so much stuff that's changed just even in the initial approach towards, you know, warm-up and tissue preparation and all that stuff. So
yeah, you know, I think it's probably a good idea to start off with the question, has your definition of function changed going into second
You know, I don't think my definition of function changed at all, because I always said in the first book, and this is where I thought I was ahead of everybody else anyway, the only thing I said in the first book was that functional training was purposeful training. And that's what I still believe, because if you think about function, something's function is its purpose. What does it do? And so when we think about, you know, muscles and what's the muscle function and what is functional anatomy, I don't think any of that stuff has changed. But I do think how we're going to attack certain things has changed. And I think in terms of, we probably have become more functional in terms of lower body. I think there was a big emphasis on unilateral training in the first book, but it's even more significant in the second book, because I think even myself as a coach 12 years ago, we'd probably just switched from doing primarily a back squat oriented program to primarily a front squat oriented program. And now I would say we're primarily a split squat, unilateral squat oriented program. So I think that's a big difference. When you look at, there's other things like the Olympic lifting and plyo chapters probably were the ones that changed the least. And we're probably still approaching power in a very similar way that we were 12 years ago. But I think we're approaching strength in a very different way. But it's really the process of core training and mobility. I think those are the areas that we've really made some progress, say, in the last decade, that has changed the book more.
You know, I'm sitting here holding the book right now, and one of the things I've always appreciated about you, Mike, is how pragmatic you are. And the book is laid out here into 11 chapters. I mean, just great pictures, super simple to read. You guys now have an online video library for coaches to go through, and especially probably more inexperienced coaches to kind of see how you guys are defining some of these exercises. Looking back on the process of all of this, you know, was there anything specifically eye-opening for you personally when you wrote this?
Yeah, just how out of date it was. I think that was the biggest thing. That was what was eye-opening, was that realization that when you write something, you probably never read it again. So when I was done in 04, when I clicked send and sent that thing to Human Kinetics, I never – and I can say that with almost everything. I very rarely read my own material over again after that time that it's initially sent to whoever is going to publish it and put it up. And so you really don't – you think you know. And then you go back and look and think. It's like looking at old pictures of yourself. And if I look at pictures of myself when I was in high school, I'd probably be hysterical because I've got long, curly hair. And, you think, I thought I looked good then. So
nice.
I think it's probably the same phenomenon here in terms of, I felt like that was a great book and really well written and still relatively timely. And now I look at it and think, maybe not so much.
You know, in chapter 3, you've titled, like, Assessing Functional Strength. I know that assessments and testing was actually quite a big topic at the NSCA convention here this past weekend. You know, where do you see coaches missing the mark when it comes to assessing functional strength?
I think they don't assess strength. I think I think we're trying to assess functional movement, which again is important. But I also think you need to know, are people strong and are they? That's where I think the term function does apply. Are they functionally strong? Can they handle their body weight? Can they do a push-up? Can they do a chin-up? Can they do a one-leg squat? These are things that I think are really important, because to me, there is no better injury prevention than strength. And I think sometimes we can get lost in all the other stuff, in mobility and in warm-up and all of these things. But if you want somebody to not get hurt, getting them stronger is probably the easiest way to help them to stay healthy. So I think that might be where people miss the boat more than anything.
They're going through. Now, you know, you're in the private sector like I am, and I know you also work with teams at the professional level as well. You know, for the listeners, do your assessments as your profile, once you've kind of gone through the demands of the sport and the individual, but does it drastically differ when you're working with one-on-one or a small group to then when you go work with, like, say, the Red Sox, when you used to work with them, for example?
No, it really doesn't, in all honesty. When we went to the Red Sox, we did FMS everybody on the Red Sox. And with our normal clients, we don't even probably, when we've got larger groups, we don't even FMS those people. I think a lot of times when we've got healthy people, we just jump into the training. I'm still a really big believer in, if you don't have a lot of time, start training, because you can, again, sometimes you can look at people and think, as you said, you've got a short summer down there. You know, you guys are going back to school August 1st. Sports are starting. If you've only got 6 weeks to train, then you should train for 6 weeks and don't waste 2 weeks of it screwing around and running them through a whole bunch of assessments and finding out what they can't do. Because one of the things I've realized, particularly with high school kids, there's a lot they can't do, but what really corrects it is doing stuff, not learning what they can't do, but actually getting out there and training and moving. So I'm a big sort of, let's get going, let's start working.
What about on the conditioning side of assessments, Mike? What's kind of your approach? What do you like when we're looking at, it's a intermittent transitional sport or American football or hockey up there for you guys? I mean, is there a one or two type of assessment that'll give you a quick insight when you don't have a lot of time, you know, to work with a player or an athlete?
Yeah, I'm a big 300 shuttle person. Although, like when you say American football, no, I probably wouldn't be as worried about 300-yard shuttle with American football. But with almost everything else, I really like the 300 shuttle. I think it's, you know, some people, again, have sort of started to view it negatively. But I think that ability, can you sprint, recover, sprint? Can you stop and start, change direction? That tells me an awful lot about somebody and an awful lot about somebody's fitness. So that's still my sort of go-to. I've actually developed a version of that we do on the ice, where we go from the goal line to the blue line. So basically in the offensive zone 7 times, and it comes out to almost exactly a minute, same relative time frame as the 300-yard shuttle that we use with a lot of our women's national groups now. And I think that's still a good, simple way to look at somebody, because I always think if you do a test like that, the person who scores the best is the person that's in the best shape. You can slice it any way you want to, but generally speaking, that's going to be relatively accurate.
Yeah, and are you doing 2 trials of that? Did you do
2 trials? Yep. With standard, you know, the because when you think about that, and you're not quite as old as I am, but you've been around for a while. When that test was developed, it was developed with 2 trials, 5-minute rest in between.
Correct.
And so we've stayed with the real, because one of the things, the reason I haven't changed it is because I always want to try to have apples to apples comparison. And so if I go back and look at my old scores and someone says, well, what's the best you've ever seen somebody run a 300-yard shuttle run? I don't want to be like, well, did you run 3? Did you run 4? Did you run 5?
Right.
To me, the test is 2. And so, you know, years ago, I still remember we had Bill Brooks, who was a wide receiver in the NFL for a long time. I think 1 year ran like, you know, 51 and 52 or 50 and 51 or something in a 300-yard shuttle when we used to do it for football. And that's still as good as anybody I've seen do it. So, and I can then compare, even generationally compare people that way.
Yeah. Is there a good high school range for high school boys? I know we've got.
I think high school boys, if they break a minute, if they average under a minute, they're in pretty good shape, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we've seen. And even with our, you know, with our college guys, we used to do it both kind of as the on and the off ice version. And we would find that our sort of elite Division I hockey players would tend to be in that like 55, 56 average kind of time. So I think, yeah, a kid that can get in, even with our girls, that's what we use now. If they've got to be able to get under a minute average, that's what we're looking for.
And bring it on. And you mentioned American football. Do you have a favorite conditioning test there?
You know, I don't. We used to do the 16-1-10s back in those days, and then we shortened that down. One time we did 24-55s, but I think if I was really – I'm not as deep in American football as I was anymore, but I think there would probably have to be some version of a 60-yard shuttle that we could repeat that I'd be looking at now, something that would be more like in the 15-second range, because obviously the energetics of that game are different.
Right.
But, yeah, I think we experimented with a bunch, and there were never any that I really fell in love with. Like, yeah, this is the one.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, we every Tuesday with the NFL guys I'm lucky enough to get to work with, we do 8 60-yard shuttles, and we progress from there each week up. And they're just different at different distances, right? We make it up, and that starts from 8 seconds up to 12 seconds. depending on how the 60-yard shuttle is run, and that seems to work pretty well. So, Lisa, glad to know I'm on the same thought with you. With you there. So let's talk to chapter four, Mike. You talk about designing a program. This is probably for me when I get to meet coaches and just chat and hear about what they're doing. I think there are a lot of myths or definitely misunderstandings about how you fit it all together. For example, we've got this morning at 6 a.m., we've got a high school coach down the street. He wants to condition his guys first and then go inside the weight room, and then they're going to lift at 7 o'clock. And we've got other guys who want to lift big and heavy before they go out and do any type of running, speed or conditioning. So, you know, for coaches who have limited time that are working with teams or athletes, you know, what are some big bucket suggestions you have coming out of this chapter on how do you fit it all in?
Well, I think you have to prioritize. You have to decide, okay, how much time do I have and what do I want to get done? But I think – to me, you always have to do your speed and power stuff first from an injury prevention standpoint. So I'm looking at it and thinking, hey, if I'm going out, I'm going to warm up. I'm going to do all of my tissue preparation stuff, and then I'm going to proceed. For me, it's basically like a speed continuum, a power continuum in terms of the fastest things are going to be first, the slowest things are going to be last, and the last thing they're going to do is condition. Strongly prefer not to condition people before they strength train. Although years ago, because of our logistical setup, that was what we did, because our field and our weight room were not near each other. So we did in fact do our conditioning and then go in and lift, just because we didn't want to be inside, you know, outside, inside, outside again. So I do think sometimes you've got to look at logistics and say, I have to do the thing that makes the most sense. I have to do the thing that saves me the most time. And if I'm losing 5 minutes in each direction getting to and from the field, now I've lost 20 minutes if I had to go in and out twice versus losing 10, then I might do it that way. And I think that's what coaches have to look at, is some really basic common sense decision making and say, you know, like I always tell everybody, it's basically like, you know, if you give me an hour, then I'm going to tell you, all right, if we've got an hour, then we can only warm up for 10 minutes. If you say we got an hour and a half, I'm going to tell you we can warm up for 15 minutes. Because I know how much of that hour, from a percentage standpoint, I want to devote to warm up.
Right.
But it really, you know, there is some variability there. Like for us, we've got – usually our workouts tend to be about an hour and a half to an hour and 40. And we will tend – our strength training will take about 40 minutes. Our conditioning will take about 50 minutes, which leaves us in general – with about 45 minutes for our warm-up, speed, plyo, med ball, all that stuff. And that tends to work out really well. But when there are days when we have an hour, then I've got to condense strength training maybe down into a half hour, and then I've got to condense all that other stuff down into another half hour. So it literally is just taking stuff away and sort of, you know, it's kind of the minimalist idea, like, okay, we're going to get down to the most basic things that we need to do. And you get into sort of the need to do versus the nice to do. I always think if we can sprint and jump and throw, and we can do that in a situation where we've had a pretty good warm up, and then if we can get in the weight room and we can push something and pull something and do something from a lower body standpoint, we're in pretty good shape.
Looking at a ground level perspective for program design, Mike, you know, we've got some coaches like to go from old school and doing, say, a 3 or 4 day split. They want to do, you know, chest. I mean, it's almost a bodybuilding perspective, right? Today we're doing chest and tries. Tomorrow we're doing legs. We've got some coaches that want to do a push on day 1 and 3 and a pull on day 2 and 4. And what's maybe a good first step for newer coaches listening right now towards how to best organize and categorize? Let's say you got 3 days a week, because it can be 2, 3, 4, or 5, but we'll go with 3 for the sake of the time. What's a good approach or template that you might suggest for newer coaches when they've got 3 days a week?
I mean, I think if you got 3 days a week, to me, it's total body workouts.
Yeah.
But again, it depends on which 3 days. Sometimes I have my Olympic girls who will train Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and we might set up the first 2 days like 2 days of a 4 day split. And the third day is total body. If we're Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we're total body every day with an emphasis every day in terms of that. We used to do that a lot during our football in-season program where we would lift, say, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday. And we would look – Sunday would be our heavy lower body day. Tuesday would be our heavy upper body day. Thursday would be our heavy Olympic lifting day. And then we'd sprinkle in a little bit of everything else during the course of that week. So I think there's a lot of ways. The biggest thing I would say, if it's a new coach, a young coach, and I hate to say this, find a program you like and copy it. I wrote a section, there's a section in the book about that in terms of sticking to the recipe. And I used to tell people not to copy programs. And then I saw how bad the programs were people made up on their own.
Right.
So I started to think, you know something? Find a really good, simple 3-day program that someone else who's much more experienced than you has made, and then copy that program. And then start to adapt a little bit and realize, okay, what do I want to do here? Do I want a unilateral squat? Do I want a bilateral squat? What do I believe? Do I believe, you know, don't just do what they do. If you don't believe in power clean from the floor, don't do it. Like for us, we do everything hanging position above the knees. But I do think you have to – some days it's better to copy until you get to the point where you're smart enough to do it on your own.
Great, great insight. And then, you know, I'm sitting here looking in this chapter right now, page 33. Again, for the listeners, you got to get the book. Mike does a really nice job of explaining what he calls the functional continuum. And for those younger coaches, or really any coach, I mean, just see how you've laid it out. You've done a really, really, really nice job. Mike, as we kind of wrap up here in part one, let's talk about you kind of personally as a coach. What are some areas that you're most focused on personally and professionally in terms of just growth going into the second half of the year?
I mean, the biggest thing for us, for me personally, I'm focused on, I'm trying to be better at home. I'm trying to be a better dad. I'm trying to be a better husband. I'm 56 years old and I got a bunch of coaches working for me. So I think much more of the focus for me personally is on me getting better. But I think professionally, the focus is for me getting my coaches better, because I've realized there's a really good book called The One Thing. I don't know if you've read it. You probably have. But they talk about trying to find the one thing that will most impact your business or your life or whatever it is. And when I sat down as a business person and looked at that book and read that book and said, okay, what is it? It was coach education. It was staff training. So that's where I've tried to put more of my energy than any place else, in terms of I could be on the floor more, I could be coaching more athletes, but I can't possibly impact as many athletes as my coaches can. And so the exponential effect of me being better is by me having better coaches, by me selecting better coaches, by me training better coaches. So that's really where a lot of my kind of energy and emphasis is right now.
I love it. Mike, listen, so grateful to have you on the show, brother. Where can listeners go to purchase the book? I'm going to put a link, obviously, in the show notes where they can get it. But where can they go to get the book, get connected with you, for those people, which would be few and far between, that might not be familiar with you, to get a hold of all your resources?
Well, the probably the easiest place to get a hold of me is on my strengthcoach.com site. That's where lately I spend the most time in terms of educating and interacting. And that's www.strengthcoachalloneword.com. They can get the book. Amazon is really the easiest place. You can buy it from Human Kinetics, but I think it's actually cheaper on Amazon than Human Kinetics sells it, which is crazy. But that's the nature of the book world now. It's very, very easy. If you just go to Amazon and type in new functional training for sports, it pops right up. So that makes it really, really easy to get. We've got Body by Boyle online, which is sort of more of our business-centric kind of book. We've got our own certification now, Certified Functional Strength Coach. So we've got a lot of stuff going on that I think people can kind of look, if they just sort of Google Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning. A lot of that stuff's going to pop up for them.
Listen, thanks so much for your time, brother. And when we get you back on in part two, I want to jump into just a little bit about core training, lower body assessment and training, and a little bit about Olympic lifting. So looking forward to having back in part two in a few weeks.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you.